Turn in the Word of God to Proverbs 15. Thomas Cranmer was compassionate, unassuming, personable. I'll give you this quotation. He had a dignified presence, a considerable reputation for learning, and manners so courteous, kindly and pleasant, that he seemed like an old friend when encountered. What makes that statement so remarkable is that it was written by one of his bitterest enemies. It's an astonishing comment, isn't it? Even his bitterest enemies had to acknowledge the kind of character that he had. And when it comes to speech, it is hard to get it right. But Proverbs is designed to help us get things right. So these seven verses that we're looking at, we do so under the heading Christian Manners. Christian Manners. In previous generations, you know, they taught manners. At least parents taught their children manners. And those that weren't taught manners, well, it was pretty obvious. And nowadays, manners is not something that has priority. But Christian manners should always matter. And that's why I began with Cranmer. Because he had Christian manners. So what do Christian manners look like? How are they evidence? Well, first of all, we notice in verses 1 and 2, thoughtful response. Thoughtful response. Some people, you know, are quick-tempered. And the fuse goes off very, very quickly. They fire off before they think. Others are snappy responders. You know, they're quick with the one-line response. But both attitudes are wrong. Both leave, shall we say, their intended victim in silence, but often angry and vengeful because they're not as quick-witted and they don't have the same retort. But God says to you, here is how you are to use that tongue. And what is said is difficult. It seems contrary to our culture. This is not how we operate in culture. This is not how our modern age operates. Indeed, I don't think any age could say that they operated any differently from our own. But God says two things to us in regards to a thoughtful response. The first thing is measure in verse 1. A soft answer turneth away wrath. And the second is knowledgeable. The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright. An illustration, of course, will help. You think of Nabal's response to David. David sent to ask for some goods, and Nabal replied in a most unwise manner. And then you have David's furious reaction to Nabal's response. A furious reaction seeking vengeance. He was going to deal with Nabal one way or another. And then you have Abigail. Abigail's measured, knowledgeable response. You see it there in 1 Samuel 25. Verse 23, when Abigail saw David, she hasted, lighted off the ass, and fell before David on her face, bowed herself to the ground, fell at his feet, and said, upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be. Well, there we pause. That's not quite how we would have done it. Upon me. We'd say yes, we'd say he's to blame. We'd point the finger, yes, you're right to get at him. No, she says, I'll take the blame. And let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience, and hear the words of thine handmaid. Let not, my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal. For as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name. Folly is with him. But I, thy handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord, whom thou didst send. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth, and as my soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden these from coming to shed blood, and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies, and they that seek evil to my Lord, be as Nabal. And now this blessing which thine handmaid hath brought unto my Lord, let it even be given unto the young men that follow my Lord. I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid. For the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord fighteth the battles of the Lord, and evil hath not been found in thee all thy days. Yet a man has risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul. But the soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of light. But the Lord thy God, and the souls of thine enemies, them shall he sling out, as out of the middle of a sling. And it shall come to pass, when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offence of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless, or that my Lord hath avenged himself. But when the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine hand. What an astonishing response from Matthew. It is, I think, one of the most remarkable speeches in Scripture. She saw the danger, and she acted to avert the danger. You have the fool, Nabal, the furious, David, and you have the judicious, Abigail. We turn to Judges 12 for a moment. Judges chapter 12, verses 1 to 4. The men of Ephraim gathered themselves together, went northward, said unto Jephthah, wherefore passest thou over to fight against the children of Ammon, and didst not call us to go with thee? We will burn thine house upon thee with fire. Jephthah said unto them, I and my people were at great strife with the children of Ammon. And when I called you, ye delivered me not out of their hands. And when I saw that ye delivered me not, I put my life in my hands, passed over against the children of Ammon, and the Lord delivered them into my hand. Wherefore then are ye come up unto me this day to fight against them? And Jephthah gathered together all the men of Gilead, fought with Ephraim, and the men of Gilead smote Ephraim, because they said, ye Gileadites are fugitives of Ephraim among the Ephraimites and among the Manassites. There's a different response. Men of Ephraim spoke rashly, foolishly, angrily. They did the opposite of Abigail. They lodged a complaint that had no foundation. The facts were presented to them. We already asked you for help. You didn't come. So we had to go and defend ourselves. And the outcome of that war of words was that battle took place. Ephraim was punished for their foolish words. Solomon says to you, measure and knowledge it. It's hard to develop those attributes, but it's there, my friends. And you have those two good examples, Samuel, Judges, Nabal, David, Abigail. What a wonderful example. And then you have the other from Judges. Thoughtful response. Secondly, spiritual awareness, verse 3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. Attributing eyes to God is a human way of stating God knows all. He knows all because he sees everything. He sees everything because he is everywhere to see. He is eternally and unchangeably so. He sees everything all the time. Nothing is hidden from the Lord. How foolish to pretend I can hide something. You can't hide anything from God. Yes, I know there are times when we are discreet before others. I get all of that. Discretion is commanded. But let us never think we can hide anything from God. God sees everything. So this comprehensive, eternal, absolute, complete sight of God is placed here in this particular place so that you can grasp why care is needed in speech, why we need a thoughtful response. In other words, Solomon is saying to you, I have shown you thoughtful response is what we need, but how can we generate that thoughtful response? Let us consider the eyes of the Lord. The Lord sees all things. In a very small way, parents would say to their children, and all of you here, now parents will recall your parents telling you, now when you're away from this house, you better be here. Because somebody will come and tell me if you don't. And that's often what happens. And someone will see you. And you come back. Uh-oh. The news has got there before. Well, in a grander fashion, the Lord has already seen. And he who sees calls us to account. And what makes it all so terrible, dreadful, is the fact that when we stand before God to give account, the Lord saw everything before the day of judgment. When the books are open, nothing will be hidden. And the fact that the Lord sees ought in consequence to have an impact upon us. Very hard to keep our temper, very hard to bite our tongue, very hard to turn a deaf ear. All those things are difficult. Solomon says, here is the motivation. The Lord sees. Think of Hagar. Hagar called Jehovah El Roi. In other words, thou God seest me. One of the titles for Jehovah. Thy God seest me. What an incredible title that is. But if we go back to 1 Samuel 25 and to Abigail again, and just to tease out the role of verse 3, Thy God seest me. Spiritual awareness, in other words, verse 26 of 1 Samuel 25. As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood. That spiritual awareness, providence has intervened. It has stopped you avenging. Verse 28, the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure portion. because my Lord fighteth the battles of the war. Verse 29. The soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of life with the Lord thy God. Verse 30. When the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee. Verse 31. When the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord. You see that spiritual awareness coming through her thoughtful response to David. Here is one who throbs, whose heart beats with spiritual awareness. That's what makes Abigail so incredibly good. She put God into it all. She knows the Lord sees. She knows the Lord is in control. She knows that the Lord has a plan. She knows the Lord wills, determines, causes things to come to pass. And that spiritual awareness influences and shapes her response. She was seriously spiritual. A seriously spiritual person. I think she would make a lot of people afraid because she was so spiritual. I would encourage you, read through very carefully her argumentation, how she begins, how she develops the argument, how she concludes. But it's that spiritual awareness that ties everything together. And that's what Solomon is saying. If you put verse 3 to the heart and center of it, if you have that spiritual awareness, then a thoughtful response is not so difficult after all. And thirdly, following on from verse 3, verses 4 to 7, this long section, profitable words. Profitable words. There are a number of aspects about speech that we should remember, because words can either help or hinder. You know, you can either encourage someone or you can destroy them. Sometimes parents, you know, are so critical of their children. The children grew up with this negative perception of themselves because it's been drummed into them for so long that they are so bad, so stupid, so silly, so all of the things that are thrown at children by parents sometimes. Then some go the opposite direction. You know, the little darlings can do no wrong. So they puff them up and fill them full of vanity. So how can words be profitable? Well, the first thing is healing, verse 4. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein as a breach in the spirit. If you look at the margin, if you have one, it says the healing of the tongue. So your tongue can be used either for good or for evil. The word wholesome is translated in our Bibles as health, healing, remedy, and cure. So the word itself, as it's translated elsewhere, draws out this aspect of words. One writer says, I've never checked it up, but I hope they're right, that when translated into Greek, the idea is therapy. Well, that's okay. We can live with that. But it speaks of a tree of life. In other words, it describes the impact of wholesome words. By contrast, you can break a person with words. Perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. And that is reinforced with the warning in verse 5. A fool despiseth his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. So parents then are expected to teach these manners to their children regarding words, the power of speech, and how speech is to be used. In other words, we don't become jellyfish. We're not all mush. Nor are we the sort of mercenary, aggressive people, but rather we know the power of words. We understand them. And we seek to bring wholesomeness into life, like a tree of life. Solomon's point is, often we are told in youth to watch what we say and how we say it, but how often we don't listen. Who despiseth his father's instruction? Often parents say to the children, like, you shouldn't say that. This is what you should have said. And we all, like nodding donkeys, nod our head, and then, of course, rush of blood to the head, and we forget everything. And we do what we're told we shouldn't do. But you either listen or you don't listen. If you don't listen, you're a fool. If you do listen, he that regardeth reproof is put. In other words, here is Solomon saying, the father says to the children, you need to listen to this. But Solomon, of course, is writing for the church, and he's saying to the church, we all need to listen. We all need to follow all of this. So for profitable words, or words to be profitable, verses 4 and 5 say wholesome or healing. The second thing is teaching. Verse 7, the lips of the wise disperse knowledge. You know, some are boring communicators, and some preachers are boring communicators. Others are fascinating. You know, you go to visit someone and they're fascinating to listen to. They've got so many stories to tell, so many interesting things to communicate, and you learn even by listening to them. But it's not about how interesting a person is, or how boring a person is. And when you go into the ministry, you know, you suddenly realize people define or describe preachers as boring or as interesting, and then you try to work out from what they say, well, what is a boring preacher? The worst thing you do is try to get a poll as to what makes a good preacher. Forget it. So what is the answer? Well, Solomon tells you a mark of wisdom is to dispense knowledge. In other words, to teach, to inform, to educate. Forget about whether it's communicated in an interesting way or in a boring way. Ask yourself, am I learning? Is there instruction? Am I being taught? Not talking for talking's sake, but to dispense knowledge. Not false information, not rumor, but knowledge, true knowledge. And remember, verse 3 is a hinge around which everything here circles. Spiritual awareness means that our words are wholesome, seeking to bring healing, to help, to build up, but also our words are to inform, to teach, to instruct. You see the illustration given in verse 6 relating to verse 7. In the house of the righteous is much treasure, but in the revenues of the wicked is trouble. The lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the foolish doeth not so. So just as the house of the righteous is full of treasure, so the lips of the wise disperse knowledge. In other words, if you go into a mansion and see all these riches, Solomon says, that's what speech should be like. Lots of knowledge, things that they have learned, sharing what we know, seeking to improve another person's knowledge, the totality of what they know, seeking to instruct. Profitable words. So a thoughtful response, spiritual awareness, and profitable words. Let's come to some points of application. First of all, I say to you, in light of these seven verses, we all need to study the power of words in order to do good. And then, having learned, to seize the opportunities of doing that good. Let's take an example. One that I suppose doesn't seem to be very much, and yet turned out to be so important. That Israelite maid in 2 Kings 5. Here was a maid who was a slave, captive out of the land of Israel. The providence of God, this girl was plucked from her home, dragged off to another country, never to see home again. She ends up amongst the Syrians. And in providence, she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. And one went in and told his Lord, saying, thus and thus saith the maid that is of the land of Israel. You know, here's this young girl, middle of nowhere, in the house of a leper. And she has the answer for Naaman the Syrian. This is her only appearance. Everything hinges on this girl's comment. Everything. She illustrates Proverbs 15, 1-7. Thoughtful, profitable, spiritual awareness. And given the description, she was probably a teenager. But it transforms Naaman's life. Just that one comment. You see, we do not know what the Lord will do with the most adverse providence on the things that we say. But look at the other side, Absalom. Absalom set about poisoning the minds of the people of Israel for his own benefit. His envy, his jealousy. He wanted the crown of Israel for himself. And so he started to mutter and complain, poison me, oh, that they would come to me. It's not just a matter of speaking, but like Abigail and the maid, speaking eloquently. I don't mean you have to go to elocution lessons. Some of us were reared on a farm and you didn't need elocution to call cows, but nonetheless, speaking eloquently of all these things. And secondly, words really matter. You think of all the words that we speak in a day, in a month, in a lifetime. We have these watches that people wear, you know, and it counts how many steps they take. Why you want to count their steps, I don't know, but anyway, this is what they do. Imagine if we had a watch that counted the words we spoke. I would be frightened, wouldn't I? You look at that meter in the meter box for the electric and all, they're just turning all the time. See the numbers changing every couple of minutes. Matthew 12, verse 36. The Lord, he says in verse 34, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. He contrasts the good and evil heart. The good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. So our words reflect what's in our heart. No matter how clever we are at covering things over with either a good heart or an evil heart. But then the Lord adds this in verse 36. But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Words matter. They matter more than many people realize. The Lord is not saying only idle words shall be called a kind. He is saying every word, and that includes all the frivolous stuff we can want. All that multitude of silly words, sentences, conversations that we have in life. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 5 says, better is it that thou shouldest not bow, than that thou shouldest bow and not pay. Suffer not thy might to cause thy flesh to sin, neither say thou before the angel that it was an error. Wherefore should God be angry at thy voice, and destroy the work of thine? The context is laying down a principle. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, thy upon earth. Therefore, let thy words be few. It's not saying, don't ever say anything. Just be completely silent. If we all applied that to the nth degree, all preachers would be silent. There'd be no preaching. There'd be no singing. There'd be nothing. But what he is saying is, be careful. James says about this, I'll finish. Be swift to hear, slow to speak. The Lord bless these words.